This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Let's on to the fallen. Let's talk about tariffs. Megyn Kelly is here with an announcement. Robbie Starbuck is here with an announcement. What a show tonight, but I'm right. All right. So before we get into all the tariff arguments and the markets and Trump and all that other stuff, that'll be a good time. I'm sure I'll offend everybody there. Let's do something that we have to do on this show. We hate it, but we feel obligated to do it to honor the fallen, especially the fallen in training. It's a big thing for me. It always has been. It always will be. When people die in military service or law enforcement, fire, you know, these dangerous jobs, they're dangerous jobs. And training for these jobs is dangerous by necessity. It has to be dangerous, otherwise you can't train properly. And people die in training, and they're oftentimes forgotten and disregarded because it's not glorious. You didn't die in battle, but it's every bit as heroic as the one who did. They served their country in a dangerous job, and they gave their lives. Last week, four U.S. Army soldiers died during a training exercise in Lithuania. We were waiting, as we do, until their names were finally released so we can honor them by name. They are Staff Sergeant Jose Duenez Jr., Staff Sergeant Edvin F. Franco, PFC Dante D. Titano, and Staff Sergeant Troy S. Knutson Collins. The oldest is 28, the youngest was 21. They gave their lives for this country, and I've had people email in because they knew we were going to do that as soon as the training accident was announced. They knew we were going to honor them. And I did have some people asking, how can this happen? Because they were part of an armored group, right? Armored, you would think of it as tanks, but not all armor is tanks. Either way, an armored vehicle, and they ended up submerged in a swamp. They drowned. They drowned with their vehicle in a swamp. And for people who don't know, they don't realize how easy this can happen. You see, when you see a tank, we'll make it about a tank. When you see a tank, you see this big, powerful machine, all this armor on it, and it is really great, right? It has all this firepower and the guns, and of course, you have the protection of being inside of the tank, and all that stuff is true. But all that stuff comes with a sacrifice. Everything is a give and take, isn't it? You can't see. You just can't see. Having been in armor before, it was one of the worst things about it. When we had, we were in armor in Iraq, and ours were called Amtraks. They were troop carriers. But you were fairly protected, somewhat protected inside. And even knowing that, oftentimes, we would bust the hatches open, the door in the roof. We'd bust the hatches open, and we'd stick our upper bodies out, because you can't see anything inside. If you're about to drive off a bridge, into a ditch, drive over, you can't see. The driver can't see. You can't see. And that's just how it goes. And so these kind of things happen. So we honor them, pray for them, pray for their families. All right? All right. Now let's talk about something else, shall we? The tariffs. It's all anybody can talk about. The tariffs this, the tariffs that. I am currently fielding more phone calls and text messages from friends than you can possibly imagine. Actually, I had a conversation with a friend on Saturday night. My wife and I got with a bunch of neighbor friends, and we were just watching the final four games. The games were on, and we were eating pizza and sitting around talking. And immediately, two different dudes came and jumped me. Jesse, what's going on with the tariffs? Jesse, I checked my app. We're losing all this money. Jesse, this. So I know what you're going through. And Donald Trump is talking about, you know, it's going to be painful for a little bit.
Is there pain in the market at some point? You're unwilling to tolerate this idea of a Trump put. Is there a threshold?
I think your question is so stupid. I mean, I think it's I don't want anything to go down. But sometimes you have to take medicine to fix something. And we have such a horrible, we have been treated so badly by other countries, because we had stupid leadership that allowed this to happen. They took our businesses, they took our money, they took our jobs, they moved it to Mexico, they moved it to Canada, they moved a lot of it to China, and it's not sustainable. We're not going to do it. Now we have hundreds of billions of dollars is pouring into our country on a monthly basis. It's pouring, it's already started. because they put tariffs on. And eventually it's going to straighten out and our country will be solid and strong again.
Okay. What I'm about to say is we have a little tariff talk. It may make you feel better. It may make you feel worse. You may get mad at me. It's a standard day anyway. So here's what it is. First, what did I tell you when Donald Trump first got elected? We talked about this before he got elected. We talked about it a lot since he got elected. Donald Trump intends to do big things. Big things. He got shot in the head. This is his last 4 years. He can't run for re-election. He's a billionaire, former and current president of the United States of America. Guys like that. Guys like that, they don't look at their lives and their legacy the same way you or I necessarily do. You know, what kind of legacy am I going to leave behind? Well, I think about my sons, right? Are my sons going to be taken care of? How are their families? Are they going to, that's what I think of as my legacy. What am I going to leave behind? Guys like Donald Trump think about what monuments are going to be named after them, right? They just don't, they look at life differently. And Trump's 4 years are going to be full of him attempting big things, which he's dead serious about. I've told you about this. He's dead serious about the Panama Canal. He's dead serious about Greenland, the Gulf of America. He's serious about these things. And he's serious when it comes to tariffs, protectionism, fair trade, whatever word you want to put on it, whether you love them or hate them. Donald Trump is dead, dead serious about them. And look, we've got guys like Lutnick out there talking about, well, they're negotiating. 50% of these countries have already reached out to negotiate. Donald Trump has flat out come out and said, well, I mean, look, negotiate all you want. Some of it doesn't even matter.
But I do want to solve the deficit problem that we have with China, with the European Union and other nations. And they're going to have to do that. And if they want to talk about that, I'm open to talking. But otherwise, why would I want to talk?
He's serious. So he means it, okay? Now let's go with this from kind of a different angle than maybe you've heard. I understand there are people who are thrilled about these tariffs, thrilled about them. And the people who are thrilled about them, maybe that's you, will talk about things like bringing back manufacturing. They're correct about that. We need to bring back manufacturing. They're correct about that goal. We need to bring back manufacturing. You have to make things in your country. Not everything, but your country has to have the ability to make things inside your borders. Otherwise, you are at the mercy of others, and that's not good. Okay, so that's good. The people who love tariffs, they're going to talk about the Rust Belt and how it got that name. I've lived it. That's my life. I was born in a Rust Belt town on the Ohio River, and I know exactly what it is. These towns where the plant, whatever that plant used to be, steel plant oftentimes, but doesn't matter which kind, these towns existed off the plant. That's where the men worked. That's where oftentimes the women worked. The businesses around that plant were really centered around the plant and the plant workers. The town was the plant. It's how, what your dad did, your granddad did. It's what you did. It was a power plant in where I grew up in Toronto, Ohio, but it was the same thing. The power plant, everyone worked at the plant or plant adjacent, right? And when the United States of America makes a focused decision, and we did, to ship those jobs overseas, then it's not just the plant that goes, the town goes. The future of a lot of people go. And the people who are pro-tariffs who talk about that are 100% correct. It's been devastating. They should not be ignored. We can't become a country with no steel but a great stock market. That doesn't work at all in that way. So the pro-tariff people are like that. Don't worry, pro-tariff people. I'm going to come back to you in a moment. Now, the anti-tariff people, they make great points too, as a matter of fact. Great points. They say things like, well, you can't bring back manufacturing just with tariffs. You have to make the business environment, the labor environment, better here. Our environmental regulations alone make it virtually impossible to have a plant here. Are we going to remove all that red tape? Is that our plan? That's a good point. We have a terrible, terrible environment for the manufacturing sector now, a terrible business environment That's why they move to places like China and Vietnam and things like that. Companies in general would rather do business in a more stable country like ours. They packed up that business and shipped it overseas because the United States of America allowed Democrats to turn this country hostile to business. So business left. That's true. That's true. So that's that. Now, as far as the pro-tariff people, remember John Carney came on the show. He talked about this.
I do think it will help on a longer-term basis, not immediately. I do think there will be some price increases. I don't think they're going to be that much. I don't think they're going to. We won't see anything like what we saw during the Biden years, where inflation got up to 9%. But I do think we'll see a half point of extra inflation. I don't think that lasts. So in other words, we'll get a one-time price hike in some things subject to tariffs, but it only part of the tariff will get passed through to consumers. And once that comes through, you won't get year after year after year of price hikes. So I think we'll have a one-time adjustment. But further on down the road, as we are producing more goods and services more efficiently in the United States, when we are able to move trade away from where they have located it, into places where stuff could actually be efficiently produced, I think we're actually going to see cheap goods, more reliable production, more reliable supply chains. We're going to be safer and more secure economically because of what we're doing today.
Okay. That's what John Carney thinks. John Carney is a very sharp guy. And I will say, I hope so. And for the Trump administration's sake, I hope that's the case. A little short-term pain, but then before too long, people are seeing benefits. Look, guys like billionaire Bill Ackman, he's out there talking about, you know, he supported Trump. He's a former lefty, supported Trump. He warns of an economic nuclear winter, and he's saying things like, you know, we didn't vote for this. I don't know, Bill. I would push back on the we didn't vote for this. Trump's talked about tariffs endlessly.
We're going to put tariffs on cars that are coming into our country.
Smart tariffs will not create inflation. They will combat inflation.
We're losing $2 trillion a year. With the tariffs, we can get that number down to a very manageable number.
If you do that, we're putting a 200% tariff on everything that you want to sell into the United States.
And if they don't agree with us, we'll put a tariff of approximately 100 to 200% on each car. We have long been taken advantage of by other countries. They've taken advantage of us for years. We lose jobs, we lose revenue, and they gain everything. And we're really ready to make changes like nobody had seen before.
Okay. So you can't say we didn't vote for this. Donald Trump has not been shy about it, and he definitely didn't lie about it. My final word on this before we get to Megyn Kelly, and this will be the word that probably offends everybody, is this. I don't know whether or not these tariffs will work, and no one else does either. I don't know whether this is going to cause economic nuclear winter or if we're going to actually get our manufacturing reshored, and everybody acting like they're sure about which way it's going to go is lying to you. They're not sure. So let's approach this in this way. For the anti-tariff people, you can argue against the tariffs. There's plenty of great arguments to make against the tariffs. Do the best you can to not sound like an elitist snob who doesn't care about blue-collar people or blue-collar towns as you speak about them, because I see a lot about that. So if you're anti-tariff, be really careful about that. Now, for you pro-tariff people, in case you thought that was only going to go one way, be very, very careful you don't sound like an envious little communist when you talk about pro-tariffs, because I've seen a lot of that. I don't care about your 401k, whatever, boomer. Little communisty, little Marxisty. Don't be full of envy either. Let's see how it goes, cross our fingers, and hope for the best. Let's talk to Megyn Kelly about it. Joining me now, the amazing Megyn Kelly, journalist. Everybody watches, listens to her show on Sirius XM. And I guess I have to introduce her as MK Media's Megyn Kelly. Megyn, what's MK Media?
We are expanding and bringing other podcasts into the MK fold. And by that, I mean we're going to help other podcasters make it in this lane. We are starting with three shows that we're going to help promote and help produce And just try to get some more sane voices out there, Jesse. As you know, they're few and far between.
There are few and far between. And I'm glad, actually, you're doing it very much, because I tell people all the time that you should start a podcast. You know, people will complain about this guy or that guy or Megyn Kelly or me or something like that. And I say, start one. Everyone should. Maybe you have something interesting to say. Maybe you don't, but you don't know till you try.
I totally agree with that. And so my feeling, having been doing it now for 5 years, is it actually is trickier than it looks to make it hit, you know, to like grow. It really is. And so if we see somebody who we think is really talented or whose voice we think should be amplified, we'll have them on the show, like you. You don't need our help, but we loved talking to you. But there are people who don't have your platform and, you know, your experience doing this. And so we're kind of looking for people like that who need some help, like boosting their show off the ground. And we struck a deal with three providers or podcasters who we think are very diverse and like where they're going to come into this world from. So I think you'll love it. You're going to like these shows.
I have no doubt. Everything Megyn Kelly touches turns to gold anyway. All right, Megyn, tariffs. Speaking of gold, we're all buying it right now because the stock market sucks. What are your thoughts on the tariffs?
I'm so sick of talking about the tariffs. I don't. Is it just me?
Me too.
I refuse to get upset about this. Don't look at your 401k. Just don't look at it. Don't make any don't sell anything and don't withdraw anything right now. Just wait it out. Wait for the market volatility to settle, which it will. Take a deep breath. And I really feel like just give Trump a chance. You know, the main people complaining about what's happening right now are rich media types who are watching their own very lucrative stock portfolios. Well, this wasn't done for them. Not everything Trump is going to do will be for them. This is an attempt to restore some possibility for the bottom half when it comes to the earners. And I think those who are in the top half should maybe just be a little quieter while we see whether this can work, while we see whether there really is a chance to bring back manufacturing to the United States or to reorder this globalized world situation that has not been working very well for the guys who built this country. So I don't think in any world does Trump let this thing go into a recession and let the pain be felt up and down the economic line for very long. He's too much of a politician for that. He loves to be loved, and he loves rich people, So he's not going to let those people suffer for that long. But just be quiet for a little bit and let the people who are at the bottom half of the economic ladder have a shot at a life that used to be the norm here in America. That's what he's doing.
I'll say this about rich people. They always have good seats to the game. You always want to be friends with some rich people because they always have some kind of choice luxury box or something like that. If you butter them up.
I know a couple of those people, and the Megyn luxury Kelly box invite. Is a good thing.
It is. All right, Megyn. Brooke Rollins was on with Jake Tapper, and she kind of dunked on him. It was hilarious. Here it was.
You've got 2 days of data. Everyone, especially on your side, on the left, is freaking out.
I'm not on the left.
But at the end of the day, listen, this whole concept... All right, Jake, thank you.
Megyn, why do they have to do this? What is it about this? Everybody with two eyes and two ears knows that Jake Tapper is on the left. Is it really a market for someone on the left who pretends to not be?
I think... I don't actually know what his political positions are, but there's no question he can't stand Trump. No question. And so, I mean, I think that's what Brooke is picking up on, right? It's like, you obviously can't stand the president. I work for the president, and you're coming at me with your questions from a place of not being able to stand President Trump. And this is like the discussion I had with the New York Times a week ago. I went into the buildings there, Jesse, sat down in the belly of the beast. And I was trying to say, like, if the Times would just own its bias, it would really go a long way toward defanging some of us on the right in the many, many attacks we launch on you. If you would just be honest about your bias, you don't have to be so defensive about it. You know, this is what I was saying to this woman, Lulu Garcia Navarro, at the Times and about the Times. And I really think this is true for most journalists. In his case, he should have said exactly where he is. He should have said, like, that was an opportunity. If he wants to come out with, I'm not actually a leftist, that's great. I'm open-minded. Where do you stand? That's what also needs to happen in order for people to actually start trusting you and your opinions.
Megyn, you always seem to get your hands on some good, juicy exclusives. Let's talk about the manifesto, the Nashville manifesto. Everyone remembers that terrible terrible school shooting with that tranny shooter, and it was bad. Well, the FBI tried to hide it. You got your hands on it. What happened?
Yeah. Biden's FBI tried to hide it and did hide it. And the Nashville police were keeping it behind, you know, locked doors. And it wasn't until Trump and Kash Patel got in charge and took over the FBI that they finally made sure it got out there. And, you know, they gave us permission to reveal that they're the ones who gave it to us, the FBI. And so we have it, and we went through it, and it's 1,000-plus pages, and it's deeply disturbing. And there's no reason for any of us to spend a lot of time thinking about what this sick, sick woman was thinking. But we have to spend just some time, because there's a reason they hid it from us for 2 years. There is a reason. The little that they reported out last week, Nashville police, was a 48-page document that basically excused the whole gender thing as a non-factor. This wasn't what caused it. And put almost nothing, I mean, literally one paragraph of a nothing burger in there when it comes to this woman, Audrey. I'm not going to say her last name. I'm just saying it because you need to know about the trans thing. And gender, one paragraph. Well, we looked through all 1,100 pages or so. She was obsessed, Jesse, obsessed with the gender thing. And not just the gender thing. I mean, like page after page on the gender stuff. Like, this was not a one-off. This is not just like, maybe I'll try he, him. No, this, she was deeply disturbed and angry over the fact that she didn't know more about the trans options when she was younger, and people were calling her she and her instead of he and him and so on. But it was, on top of that, like a syllabus of information that you would get at Brown University or Harvard or any of these leftist universities right now, Jesse, on how much she hates America, how evil America is, how terrible it is present day to Black and Brown people, how she hates being white. Whites ruin everything. She's obsessed with race. She's obsessed with gender. She absolutely loathes the country. And to me, it became very clear, reading page after page, why they wanted to hide this, because this is their agenda. I mean, this is all the stuff they tout, shove down the throats of our children, trying to tell us that this is what you have to study and believe to be kind. And this woman's so-called manifesto, whatever you want to call it, it's multiple pages and multiple documents, just puts the lie to that being any sort of force for good.
Megan, honestly, maybe the sickest part of this whole thing is that the FBI hid it. And look, I like Cash. I'm a fan and, frankly, a friend of Dan Bongino. So this is not about those two guys. But, Megan, you tell me the federal law enforcement arm of the United States of America spent 3 years burying a manifesto because it might make tranny people look bad. Megan, I tell you, that's an organization that doesn't need a little nip here and a little tuck there. That's an organization that cannot be saved. What do you say?
I agree with the words you just spoke. It's sick. I don't know how many school shootings I've covered since I became a reporter, Jesse. And I was on campus at Virginia Tech when that happened, and I was a very new reporter, still living in D.C. I've gone through a lot of these. I don't remember one where they wouldn't give us the so-called manifesto. And all along, we've been wondering, like, what the hell's in this document? That it's, you know, we can't see it? This is the one that we can't see? No. There's nothing so uniquely disturbing. They're all deeply disturbing. They all talk about, you know, the worst of the worst things they want to do. What's different about this one is every left-wing ideology is touted, embraced, espoused. She's taken it to heart. And, you know, Nashville, PD, you know, Nashville's Democrat. Nashville went for Kamala. Just because it's in Tennessee doesn't mean it's right-wing. And so I really think this is a leftist town under a leftist government, and the same for the FBI for its tenure over the recent years, that decided their favorite little issues were not going to take a beating once this thing came out. And so they already got their wish in large part by making it drag for 2 years. You know, Steven Crowder, to his credit, got his hands on 3 pages of it. That was helpful. But they didn't want us to see it. And enough time has passed now that the attention on it will be diminished. So they've won in part. But you're right. As far as the FBI itself goes, I think we're going to have to go down to the studs to get anything that comes close to being useful.
Megan, thank you for everything. I appreciate it. I'll talk to you soon. All right. That's actually going to lead us perfectly into cultural rot, because we have to discuss something that's still kind of lurking there underneath the surface, if you will. Before we get to that, let's not forget that corporate America has done everything in their power to ensure the cultural rot of this country. They're not passively sitting on the sidelines watching it happen. Corporate America has taken their gigantic sums of money and they have invested in the filth of this country. Pure Talk's never done that. AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon, they've done that. Pure Talk's never done it. When you pay your cell phone bill, do you pay for the cultural rot of your country? You can switch to Pure Talk. You'd be on the same 5G network, so you're not sacrificing service. It's easy to switch. Shoot, you keep your phone if you want, or get a brand new one. You save money. Switch to Pure Talk. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Okay, so I just wanted to, just for a couple minutes here, I wanted to talk about something that's been on my mind as it pertains to the culture war. Because we just lived through this kind of weird little period, and it can be hard to tell where we are in the culture war fight. And here's what I mean. The weird little period we went through, Joe Biden got installed as president, and that really, during that 4 years, that was what felt like peak demonic culture war stuff. Yeah, you had trannies in the White House. It was DEI everywhere, open promotion of anti-white racism. It was just the worst thing in the world. And the United States of America, for a lot of different reasons, remember, not everyone votes the way you vote or the way I vote, for the same reasons. The United States of America, it really felt like the country as a whole broke against that when we elected Donald Trump. It felt like that, right? It felt like that was an important part of it. That's why the election was so overwhelming. Every county shifting to the right. It felt like a rejection of a lot of things, but it most definitely felt like a rejection of that. And to be honest, a lot of it was. You know, the men and women sports things, Americans just kind of, we had enough of the nutty demonic insanity, okay? And in some ways, we're right. In some ways, that's a correct way of thinking. America did reject it. It did push it away. I mean, the Snow White, the new Disney Snow White movie that bombed, the American people would have gone to see a new Snow White movie. They would have flocked to go see one, but these are the stars.
I mean, you know, the original cartoon came out in 1937, and very evidently so. There's a big focus on her love story. With a guy who literally stalks her.
Yeah.
Weird.
Super weird.
So we didn't do that this time.
So no prince or a different kind of prince?
We have a different approach to what I'm sure a lot of people will assume is a love story just because, like, we cast a guy in the movie.
It's no longer 1937, and we absolutely wrote a Snow White that
she's
is...
She's not going to be yeah. saved by the prince.
She's not going to be saved by the prince, and she's not going to be dreaming about true love.
The American people saw enough of that and said, not interested. So that's good. That's good. Like, this is all good. We did reject it. But I get this sense that the American people, or that those of us on the right, that we feel like America has won the culture war. Listen, these people are demonic. I'm talking about the people who are trying to tear apart the moral fabric of this country. They're demonic. This whole trans evil, this is demonic stuff. And demons don't quit. Evil doesn't quit. We are in the ocean, and we fought off the shark for now. We did not kill the shark. I say this because we need to remain ever vigilant, and we need to stay on the attack. They may be on the run, even. They may have turtled up a little bit. They are not defeated by any stretch of the imagination. Continue to put your money where your morals are. Continue to be vigilant. Be involved in your schools. Pay attention to what your children listen to and watch. Be vigilant, all right? All right. Let's talk to Robbie Starbuck about some of this vigilance. Before we get to that, let me talk to you about sleeping well, about dream powder from Beam. I love it so much. I love it. Because, look, do I sound like I love it? I had some again last night. I had a cup of hot chocolate. It's like 9 o'clock. I was up with the kids. We were hanging out, and I just wanted to make sure, because today's Monday, I wanted to make sure I had a good night's sleep. So I had a little cup of hot chocolate, but it was with dream powder, cinnamon chocolate with all these natural things in it, like magnesium and melatonin, things like that. And you just sleep like a baby, and you wake up feeling great. 6:30 this morning, I was out of bed, skipping around the house. Not really, that'd be weird, but you understand what I mean. Want to sleep like that? Up to 40% off at shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back. Well, remember, the communist is always trying to get his sick religion as part of the law. This is so he can use the law, so he can use, frankly, law enforcement to force you to succumb to his will. That's, the communists have done this forever. In Colorado, they greenlit a bill that could classify misgendering somebody as a form of harassment and discrimination. Why would you bother doing such a thing? So they can send the police to kick in your door and arrest you for not acknowledging reality. Yeah, I know, it's a sick bunch of people. Joining me now, someone who's very familiar with them, Robbie Starbuck, visiting fellow. Congratulations on that, by the way, Robbie, at the Heritage Foundation. Robbie, a lot of people, because it feels like the culture war is kind of breaking our way right now, could have convinced themselves that they're on the run. These people are not on the run, are they?
No. And any single state where they have enough institutional power to do things like this, they will continue to do it. They are doubling down on crazy. And that's very important for people to understand, because folks after the election were thinking, okay, maybe the Democrats or the left in general will sort of moderate on these issues. And we're not seeing that, unfortunately. I'd love to see more of it. I'd love to see these groups go and say, oh, let's move to a moderate place, but it's just not happening on the left. And so I think folks have to understand, in these states that are, you know, very, very much on the left, you're going to continue to see this type of policy push. And I think what's most dangerous about it is that bills like this actually seek to create custody decisions on the basis of whether or not a parent is, quote, affirming of the gender identity of their kids. So you could actually see many parents, and you will see many parents, losing custody of their kids if they are not, quote, affirming of that child if they decide they're transgender.
Oh, jeez. Robbie, can you explain why they won't back off of the trans stuff? Because of every policy on the left, you could go down the list, and yes, they're unpopular on virtually all of them, but every single poll shows this one is a loser, and an unbelievable loser for not even political people, people in the middle. It's just a loser for the left, yet they can't let it go. Why?
Well, that's how you know that leftism has become sort of like a pseudo-religion, right? Because that's the type of group that will defend something that's extraordinarily unpopular if it feels like it's part of the tenets of their religion and they just can't let it go. And so that's what we're seeing is the left broadly holding on to these 80-20 issues where 80% of society is wholly opposed to it on a moral level, on just a pure intellectual sanity-based level, and they're holding on to it. And I think the only thing that you can sort of get from this is that, you know, in these recent years where you've seen a shift away from the left among many different people who used to be on the left, you can really just kind of count on that to continue, where folks leave because the left is just getting so crazy in terms of their adoption of these policies.
Robbie, the Supreme Court did just rule in favor of the Trump administration. I mean, I guess we have one of those every now and then when it comes to DEI, the education department's freezing DEI grants. So maybe at least as far as the courts go, we have some sanity coming back.
Yeah, you know, let me put my Heritage Foundation visiting fellow hat on now. When I look at a decision like this, what I see is some semblance of sanity, because the courts absolutely should be able to see very clearly the DEI in all the forms we're seeing it functionally violate the law in many different senses. And so I think this is a good step in the right direction. Ultimately, there's a number of DEI-based issues that are going to have to go up to the Supreme Court. And I think we're going to have consistent decision after consistent decision that these policies do, in fact, violate the law. And I think companies, in many respects, are preparing for that moment. And they know that that's coming down the pike here is like, we're going to see these policies crushed.
Robbie, keep that Heritage Foundation hat on because you've actually started a new initiative with them. Tell us about it.
Yeah, you know, so I've been doing this work since last year in June, going company by company, eliminating woke policies and DEI policies for major corporations. And now there's sort of new tools in this deal with the Heritage Foundation where we're going to have this capital markets initiative and thinking about not only how you eliminate this insanity from corporate America and corporations at large all across the globe, but really also how we can make sure that conservatives like us have our voice heard in the marketplace so that wokeness and all this craziness we've seen in recent years never happens again. That means using our money wisely. That means using our power collectively wisely and having a voice in these rooms, on these boards, and things along those lines. So we're going to be looking at this as a multi-pronged effort to essentially bring sanity back and focus on excellence in America once again, get out of this business of division and wokeness, and embrace a future where we really win again in corporate America, because we want to see America great. And for America to be great, our companies have to be great, and they cannot be prisoners to this crazy ideology.
Robbie, how do we lose them? I understand you just got all over Pepsi, and I love that. You feel free to talk about it. But how in the world did this happen? When I was a kid, a Pepsi commercial with some, you know, professional athlete sipping a Pepsi after a touchdown. It was just like normal stuff. But now it's sick. Why? How?
It's ideological capture. You know, I mean, in many respects, a lot of this came from the academic level upstream into these companies. And so what I mean by that is you had wokeness infect the schools first, right? And then a lot of those students who, you know, were sort of raised up in this environment of safe spaces and coloring books on college campuses for their safety and, you know, for them to feel okay, they moved upstream into PR jobs and into HR jobs. And then George Floyd happened. And after that happened, there was a huge push from those HR departments, from those PR departments to create DEI departments. And the pitch from them to executives was essentially, this is how we signal to the public that we are not racist. And if you don't do this, we're going to look like a racist company. And so a lot of those executives fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. And they poured millions and millions, in some cases, billions of dollars into these initiatives. And what did they get back for it? Nothing good. It has hurt their companies year over year to an alarming degree. Executives realize it now, and they've been looking for how they get out from under it. And we've been giving them every reason to get out from under it. And so I think in many ways, we're doing a service for corporate America because we're helping them to get out from under this extremely unpopular, expensive, wasteful ideology. And but that's how we got here, is really essentially activists making their way into corporate America and forcing their ideologies into the actual company itself. I mean, it got to a point of absurdity where we saw the number one resource that was being recommended by major Fortune 500 corporations in their DEI resources section was Ibram Kendi's How to Be an Anti-Racist book, which says to be anti-racist, you must oppose capitalism. That is the core message of the book, the theme, right? So you've got major corporations who rely on capitalism to survive, saying to their employees, hey, read this book that essentially teaches you to be a communist or says you're a racist bigot if you're not a communist. So, you know, we got to that point of absurdity and now we're turning back and we're turning back hard. And I think you're going to see sanity overwhelmingly be the overarching thought process of corporations over the next year.
Robbie, I can't help but think it's April now, which means June cometh. And we all know what June has become in this daggone country. Pride Month, where we all have to get waterboarded with rainbow propaganda. But it seemed like it was turned down. The volume of it was turned down last year. Am I just old and out of touch, or was it?
The volume was turned down last year, but it's going to look very different this year. In fact, separate from what I'm doing with Heritage Foundation, I, on a personal level with my team, have notified most major corporations that they should be very careful in this upcoming Pride Month, you know, because we are going to have people filming at a lot of the major events. And we're going to be eagle-eyed about who sponsored what. And if children are exposed to inappropriate content, The public's going to know about it. And so companies, I think, are being very careful about this, because I've seen the news headlines from, you know, legacy media essentially crying that all these Pride events are losing their corporate funding. And I'd like to think we played a big part in that. At the end of the day, also, there's just a general fear that's palpable among these companies that they don't want to be the next Bud Light or the next Tractor Supply or the next John Deere or the next Harley Davidson, right? So they're just avoiding this at all costs, I think, in most cases. But there will be some stupid companies that go out there and they embrace this fully, and we're going to be there when inappropriate things happen, and we're going to make sure the public knows about it.
Robbie, finally, before I let you go, will you talk about the Human Rights Campaign, the HRC? Obviously, you're well familiar with them, and they're familiar with you, but most people, they don't understand what this group is, how powerful this group is, and the part they play in so much of this stuff. Talk about this mafia group.
Yeah, in my view, they are just pure poison, you know, maybe poison packed into a donut. So they wave the donut right in front of companies and they bite it and they swallow the poison. That's the best way I could put it, a very strange donut that's filled with poison. But essentially, this group operates as a cartel to push the LGBTQ mindset, policy set into major corporations. And so they do that in a number of different ways. One of the ways they do it is through the CEI scoring system. The CEI scoring system, which many people may have heard of, it essentially says you have to have met certain benchmarks to get 100% score, right? And there's financial benefits to doing so. So for a long time over previous years, these financial institutions were actually giving companies preferential treatment if they got 100% score on their HRC scoring system. So essentially what it says is you have to allow men in the bathroom with women if they say they're a woman. You've got to pay for sex changes. You've got to pay for sex changes even for dependents of employees if you want 100% score. You've got to have internal LGBTQ events at the office. You've got to show that. You've got to provide it to the HRC evidence that you did so. You've got to support outside LGBTQ plus events, a number of them. And there's more down that list. It goes on and on and on. But essentially, you have to do all these things to be able to get that 100% score. And then you have to publicly boast it, right? So many companies were doing this until we came along last year. And we made the pitch to them, essentially, that they need to drop all third-party scoring systems. Because in essence, my concern for companies is that they shouldn't be doing the Robbie scoring system, and they also shouldn't be doing the HRC scoring system. And that's because if you've got these scoring systems that are diametrically opposed, what's going to happen is you're going to get squeezed. And companies should not want to get squeezed by both left-wing and right-wing consumers. They should want to be able to serve everybody if they're a public company, right? If you're in that Fortune 500, you're on the stock market, you want to make the most money for your shareholders you possibly can. And to do that, you need to get out of divisive politics. And that's been my overarching message to them, is get out of the business of division and be focused on making money again. And the way to do that is not to get involved with any of these third-party groups that want to do a scoring system that is going to divide us.
Robbie, keep going, my friend. I appreciate you very much. All right. We have Lighten the Mood next. Before we lighten the mood, maybe lighten your mood with this, with chalk. You know, natural supplements, natural herbal supplements from chalk can save your mood. Fellas, let me talk to you for a second. You down at all? You have these periods of time, maybe it's often, where you're just kind of down, can't really explain it, listless, if you will. Your T levels are too low. It's not your fault. The estrogens are in the water. We drink them. It's unbelievable what they've done to the testosterone levels in this country. But you just need to fix it, that's all. And you don't need to jam a needle in your arm. Try a male vitality stack from Chalk. Go after it naturally. 20% increase in your T levels in 90 days. You know what your mood's going to be. You're going to feel just good all the time. You're not going to be able to explain it. Have your life back. Chalk.com/JesseTV gets you a gigantic discount. Male Vitality Stack. Try it. We'll be back. All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And I've got to tell you something, all right? I like Subway. I can't help it. I like Subway. When I go to Subway, well, first, you know, before I even go into their new thing, you should understand that the best cookies in the United States of America They're served at Subway. Did you know that? That little cookie display they have, I bet you bypass it every time. Nah, I don't want any chocolate chip. I don't want any oatmeal raisin. Subway has the best cookies in the United States of America. I won't walk in one without coming out with a couple cookies. You know that? There's a little tidbit. Two, there's Southwest, Chipotle Southwest. What is in that bottle? Southwest, whatever. There's Southwest sauce. It's Chipotle. I get a cheese steak, double cheese, of course, and I just drown it in that sauce. I had those poor women at Subway just hose that stuff all over it. It's fantastic. Fantastic. I used to eat two of them when I was in the Marine Corps, 2 footlongs. Can't eat like that anymore, but still, I'm a Subway fan. And so you might turn your nose up at this, but I won't.
We got the Doritos footlong nachos a little bit early, so of course we gotta try them. Let's see what these look like. Whoa, look at that. You start with a bag of chips, you get your choice of chicken or steak. They've got tomatoes, they got onions, they've got like the regular cheese, they've got the Chipotle sauce. They've got some jalapenos. They're a bit of a mess as you expect from nachos, but this is a nice little snack. For $5, it doesn't feel like a bad value, especially when you get some steak, get all the toppings on there. It's got a little bit of heat. It's got some good flavor. It is a mess, but they did give me a fork.
Oh, sorry. I'm in. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.